time for our Monday morning house call from Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Doc, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob. How about yourself?
I'm happy to hear that our numbers in Illinois are going down. What can you report from talking to your colleagues and the hospital situation around here? How does it look?
Yeah, it is. It's looking very promising. You know, it's I would have predicted that we wouldn't have hit phase four till much later in the year, and it looks like we're going to hit that this week. So very promising that our numbers of hospitalizations and our number of intensive care beds being used are going down. We have ample supply of ventilators, so that's all good news. And now, you know, it's a matter of have we seen some of the public get a little apathetic about getting tested, saying, well, I'm not even going to get tested. So that's probably the biggest concern, is that we're still trying to encourage people to get tested so that we can identify those asymptomatic people and even flatten this even more.
How promising are those reports about existing medicines being tested? I saw one report about Xanax might be used to block the coronavirus. Are you optimistic about all this?
Well, if you look at it, you know, we have looked at thousands and thousands and thousands of drugs to see if they can help in any way. Just to put it in perspective, Northwestern alone is on 150 different clinical trials right now for coronavirus. So, you know, there's a lot of people looking at a lot of things. Is Xanax going to help us? It could. You know, one thing it definitely helps is the anxiety related to this illness. Many people, when they get it, they're very anxious. Are they going to be put on a ventilator? Are they going to do okay? Are they going to die? And sometimes just that anxiety alone will really impact their immune system. So decrease that anxiety with the medication. You know, some of the other ones that they looked at actually are medications for dogs. You know, I mean, it's amazing that they're looking at carprofen, which is an anti-inflammatory for dogs, which is similar to ibuprofen, but not the same. And if you remember early on, the studies were coming out saying, don't use ibuprofen. It looks like it's bad. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's been proven to not be true. And we actually are using ibuprofen now for keeping fevers down as well as its anti-inflammatory properties.
Talking about animals, can pets, I've seen different reports about this and I'm confused. Can pets catch COVID-19 from humans? Can humans get it from an animal?
Yeah, so we know that it can go from humans to pets. So we know that it can go from a human to their cat, a human to their dog. Pets actually seem to do very well with this. We don't, you know, they have very few symptoms, the ones that they've noticed, the ones that they've found. And we don't even know about all the other ones that, you know, you have the person who tests positive, is asymptomatic or has symptoms and is in their home with their pet. Many of those pets may have been exposed and infected just like the other individuals in the family. There haven't been cases where the dog or the cat gave it back to another human. So we know that they can get it. But again, you know, how close do you get to a dog? And dogs and cats are so close to the ground that even if they are lapping, you know, breathing heavy, you know, the chance of that getting up to a level, unless the dog's sitting on your lap, is pretty low. So again, the biggest concern is obviously person to person. Yeah, but we do know that pets can get that from us.
We were at a friend's backyard the other night, and they have a dog, and so naturally I want to pet the dog, and I'm petting the dog, and I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, is this a bad idea? Because what if somebody who has the virus was petting the dog, and then all of a sudden all sorts of things went through my head. Does the dog have it? Can the dog give it to me? Did somebody pet the dog with the virus? You know, how concerned do we have to be about that?
Yeah, no concern there. No concern about petting the dog. I mean, unless someone coughed on the dog, you pet the dog, you put your hand to your mouth, you know, within a very short period of time, that would be the biggest possibility. But you said something there that I hope people hear. You know, you wanted to go over and pet the dog, right? The social interactions and the social impact with pets is so important, even in this time. You know, you go to the airports, you see therapy dogs, you come to the hospital, you know, we have therapy dogs. Dogs and pets are so calming and relieving to us. So in these times of anxiety, whether it's things going on in the public or whether it's COVID, pets play a very important role in keeping our anxiety down.
Yeah, you can tell me about it. It helps your blood pressure. Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Lots of good questions from listeners, Doc. Let's get to a couple of them if we have time here. A lot of folks are starting to move around, and they're even going on vacations. And here's a question about that. Should you quarantine from work after flying or staying in a hotel? What do you think?
Well, I flew yesterday, and I'm at work, so I guess I'd have to say no.
Yeah.
You know, the airlines right now, they are very diligent as far as keeping the planes clean and how you're loading and getting in and off, in and out of the planes. I am not overly concerned about that. I think hotels are going to be doing the same. You know, they're not offering service during the week or during your stay. So you control that room, and really what's in that room is you. So I'm not overly concerned. I actually encourage people now to probably get up and start moving around a little bit. We have been pent up a little bit. But make sure that you're doing all the things that we talk about. You know, wearing a mask, very important, wearing a mask on a plane, obviously. And then really just the physical distancing as much as you can.
What about cases of people with the virus getting it a second time? Do we know enough about that yet to get a fact on it?
No, we don't. You know, there's been some anecdotal cases where it appears that someone got it again. But again, we haven't really found a trend to show that. We don't have enough information right now. We're gathering it as we're collecting people who test positive at the antibody test. Those are going to be the ones that we're going to be looking at in the fall if we get a second resurgence of this. Do they have any protection? So right now it's a couple anecdotal stories out of China, but really we haven't had the illness here in the United States long enough to see that second case come by.
If people are asymptomatic, can they get rid of the virus? How long does it stay in their system?
Yeah. So the asymptomatic, the individual who's identified with a positive test and is asymptomatic, should really self-quarantine for 14 days. We know at the end of 14 days, they may continue to test positive, but we're really thinking that that is just some of the viral remnants and portions of the virus, but they are not contagious at that point. So really, after 14 days, some people even say 10 days, we're a little bit more conservative and cautious to say 14. You know, at that point, you really would not be contagious. So, and a lot of people can't self-quarantine, you know, so we really make sure that they physical distance and wear a mask and make sure that people understand that they had tested positive.
I know every week I ask you about this, Doc, so I'm sorry, but there seems to be a report about blood types coming out every other day. And what's the deal on this? Because the most recent news story was indicating type A blood may have a higher risk of catching the virus and of developing severe symptoms. Type O blood with a lower risk. What about that?
Yeah, you know, you've asked that probably to me at least three times over the
yeah, I'm sorry.
And each time I told, no, are you kidding? It's actually fascinating. And when I saw it and I talked with Joe about it, it's like, Joe Romano, your producer, when I said, oh my gosh, you know, the question that Bob's been asking that I've been telling him, no, don't worry about it. Red blood cells carry oxygen to the body. White blood cells fight infection. But in fact, what you're saying is absolutely right. So now we're collecting so much data on these individuals that we have really found out, mainly in Europe is where this information is coming from. We'll duplicate that same study here. But in Spain, as well as in Italy, they did large studies, and they look at all the demographics. And sure enough, individuals who are type A have a higher risk for more severe illness, and there seems to be a protective aspect of type O blood. Now, whether it's due to the antibodies that are in those individuals with those blood types, whether it is another genetic thing that just happens to happen with these individuals, we aren't sure. We haven't figured out why, because like we said, red blood cells don't have anything to do with fighting off infection. So it'll be interesting to see whether they have a higher propensity to hold on to oxygen and dilute oxygen easier, one of those blood types when the infection goes on. But I'll tell you, it's being really looked at right now.
So now you got to remember what your blood type is. I think I'm O. I'm trying to recall a test we did in high school in physiology class. But I guess if you've had a physical recently, it should be in your report, right?
Possibly, you know, people often want to know their blood type. It's more of an interest than it is anything. So you possibly could know it. Now, I would say to people that are type O, that doesn't mean don't wear a mask and run around in large groups. You know, it just shows you that you might have some protection from the virus, but not like a vaccine or not anything where I would go crazy saying, I'm type O, I'm not going to get this.
Yeah, be smart.
Yeah.
Have you looked into the second wave of the 1918 Spanish flu at all? That was very deadly. Are there any lessons to be learned from what was done there and what wasn't done? Have you had a chance to get into that at all, Doc?
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's absolutely, it's fascinating, and there's some really good books written about it, because it's probably one of the most fascinating illnesses in history that are, it's just unbelievable. It's a great read if you want to do it. I mean, we call it the Spanish flu, but it actually started here in the United States in Kansas. We brought it to Europe with our army, you know, during the war. So, you know, the first wave, yeah, it was in the spring of 1918, and it was very bad. But the second wave was the biggest one. And what happened is they found that the virus mutated between the spring and the fall. One of the concerns we have right now with coronavirus. So it's really interesting that happened. Now, the bad thing about it at that time in 1918, we didn't have the tracking mechanism because we essentially, like I said, we brought it over there. We didn't really think about isolation for army. You know, we didn't have one patient, two patients in a room. Are you kidding? We had thousands of them in tents and bunks. So we really did a great job of spreading this and allowing the virus to continue to multiply and then actually mutate. And then what happened is we found that this virus actually killed younger people and middle-aged people as well as older people. And what they found as they've gone back and looked at tissue and autopsies is it's the cytokine storm that actually killed these individuals. And we've talked about that. There's two parts of this illness, unfortunately. One is the virus itself, and it gets into our body, and it gets into the cells, and it replicates, and it causes inflammation and fever and cough. The other part is that the body's immune system goes into overdrive, overreaction of the immune system, and it actually fills the lungs with fluid, and that's the cytokine storm. Well, we have medications now to treat that, because that was the big thing that happened in 1918.
Yeah, it's very interesting to read about that. And what I took away from the stories about it, be careful when you think it's going away, because it can come back with a vengeance.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it was. You talk about the book, The Perfect Storm. This was the perfect storm. We couldn't quarantine these individuals because they were in a war. We put them in wards and hospitals. We kept the munitions factories open. So how did we do that? We actually had a lot more people actually working very close to each other. All of the nurses that we would have been taking care of anybody who was ill, we deployed them into the army to serve in army hospitals even across Europe. Mm. And we had no medications and limited number of ventilators. In the ones that we did, we couldn't move around the country. Mm-hmm. So you talk about a perfect storm for an illness. Think about all the things we've been able to do here with personal protective equipment, mm-hmm. ventilators, medications, research. Mm-hmm. Think if we didn't have any of that, the impact of what would happen.
Yep, thank goodness we do. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Look forward to our Monday morning house call next week. You have a good week, Doc.
You got it, Bob. Take care.